Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and Katie Bors. So how easy will it be to get a trade deal with America post-Brexit? And do we even want one? White House National Security Advisor John Bolton is in London this week and has told Boris Johnson that the US is keen to accelerate trade negotiations post-Brexit, starting with sector-by-sector mini-deals. Katie, tell us about those.
Yes, so John Bolton was trying to talk up the prospect of a UK-US trade deal. He said the UK would be first in line. That is supposed to be a rebuke to Barack Obama, the former president, who said that we'd be at the back of the queue if he left the EU. Donald Trump has also suggested it'd be first in line. Yep. I think under Theresa May, when she was prime minister, there was always this like reluctance or cautiousness when talking about this US trade deal, partly because I think that she didn't want to antagonise the EU. Her focus was on getting a deal with the EU, but also because so many critics would say, well, why do you even want to do a deal with the US that is going to lower standards in the country? And you can see lots of the opponents, perhaps because they are anti-Brexit or just because they are suspicious of what the trade deal would bring, would say things like it would mean chlorinated chicken in the country. And there's also the attack, which is that it would open up the NHS and people argue it would lead to privatisation. So when it comes to the comments made by John Bolton yesterday, I think he talked about how if you wanted to do an accelerated trade deal, so clearly these things take a long time, you could speed things up by doing sector by sector mini trade deals. Now, he suggested manufacturing first. I think if you look at the way the UK economy is, we are a heavy services economy, so it perhaps wouldn't be one of the most effect for the UK. But I do think that this is a positive for number 10, because one of the big criticisms, as I just mentioned, of this idea of doing a trade deal was, well, the US won't let you actually do a trade deal unless the UK surrenders all these things. We're allowed to have, on agriculture is particularly controversial, we're allowed to have chlorinated chicken, steroid beef, all these things that you kept seeing in reports. Whereas if you can do it section by section, it does mean that you might lose some of your negotiating ability on various things, but it also means that it isn't going to hinge, for example, a manufacturing deal, perhaps on something like chlorinated chicken. So I think that's something for the Boris Johnson government to go back at people with.
Fraser, do you think this could be a way for America to put its interests first, put America first, and say, you know, we'll start with the sectors that are good for us and not necessarily helpful for you, such as manufacturing and not necessarily services?
I don't think it works that way. I think free trade benefits both people. And a lot of the discussion we've had so far has been, America will demand a price for free trade. Well, I mean, the price is simple. They get to sell more of their stuff to us, and we get to sell more of our stuff to them. Free trade is a win-win situation. If both people weren't going to win from a trade, it wouldn't happen in the first place.
Might say that post-Brexit, we're not really in a position to have our best manoeves at hand. So we might accept
The argument, and you get these a lot from the opponents of free trade, is that we're going to be shafted, that the Americans will be flooding our market with their dodgy chicken, they're going to want access to our terrible NHS. These are the protectionist noises that we hear a lot. But I'm struck by how often we do hear them from Brexiteers as well. I mean, let's not forget, it was Michael Gove who was sounding off about chlorinated chicken this time 2 years ago. And this is the guy who campaigned heavily for Brexit, and then all of a sudden doesn't seem to like the idea that British consumers would have the choice to go for an American chicken. I mean, many of our listeners will be in America this summer. I doubt they stayed away from chicken in case it was sprayed with chlorine the way that our salads are routinely sprayed with chlorine. It's perfectly normal. But this raises the question as to whether the Brexiteers can actually handle free trade or not. We haven't really had a proper debate about trade in this country for about 40 years, since we gave the powers over to the EU in the first place. So you can get the situation of Brexiteers saying, oh yeah, we want to leave the EU and we want to do a trade deal. But when faced with what that might mean, they go, oh, maybe we're not so sure about this. Maybe we're not sure about this chicken. Maybe we're not sure about this lamb from New Zealand because it will cut the price of British lamb. So you get these protectionist voices coming from those who didn't like the EU. So you're getting this sort of strange dislocation between people who think free trade with the EU is great, but who think free trade with America is bad, and then vice versa. Now, these are incoherent positions. If you think free trade is good, it's good with the EU as well as the US.
Sure.
And if you think it's bad, then it's bad with both. We've never properly tested just how up for free trade the Tory party is. Not recently. It was split by this question a few generations ago because they couldn't decide whether between the interests of a Tory protectionist who didn't want the farmers to be subjected to cheap corn back then, cheap lamb today, and between the free traders who think that the consumer's interest must always come first. The Spectator has always, throughout the last 191 years, been on the side of free trade, and we are now. And I think America's being actually quite soft to say, okay, if you guys are freaked out by our chicken, you don't have to take it. I would prefer that some Brexiteers would make the argument for that. If consumers want to buy American chicken and it's cheaper, if it saves family money, then why not give the family that choice?
I think when it comes to the Brexiteers and the division between the free market, the free trade group and the protectionists, we did get a bit of an insight into this when we had the row over blue passports. And that was not about the colour the passport was going to be, but it was about which firm is going to make the blue passports. And there was a row at the time because a UK firm did not win it. But that's because they actually came with a much higher price than a Franco-Dutch firm. And you saw several Tory MPs who had campaigned for Brexit criticising the decision to go to Europe to make the passport, saying it should be made in Britain. But then on the other hand, you had free trade Brexiteer MPs saying, no, the whole point of free trade is having that competition. And actually, what is better value for the taxpayer on this is going to the other firm. And you even had papers who had all campaigned for Brexit, so The Sun and I think the Daily Mail, taking different positions on it. So
that's really interesting.
I think that if we are heading to a Brexit where the UK is not stuck in a customs union and where there is the opportunity of free trade, you are going to see these tensions keep bubbling up. And it means that those people who, and there are quite a lot of them in the Tory party, who basically actually pushed for Brexit largely because they wanted the opportunity for free trade to trade with emerging economies, are going to have to make the argument quite persuasively, because even their own lot in terms of leave campaigners are not all sold on it.
Fraser, you mentioned a price to free trade and you said that there wasn't a price to it because it's all transactional, but could there be a political price to it? John Bolton, after all, is a national security advisor. He's not a trade envoy. So when he's offering something like this, could he be thinking about Huawei, Iran and the British position on those things?
Oh, you bet. I mean, right now, if I was in John Bolton's position, I would be thinking, this is a great chance to have Britain more in America's diplomatic orbit. Because right now, they do want help. They want us to stand with them on Huawei. And by the way, Boris Johnson's cabinet probably would agree with them on that. But they want a whole bunch of diplomatic things. Now, this is my concern about no-deal Brexit, that what it will do is rupture relations with Europe and mean that Europe no longer has the critical mass to hold its own diplomatically. So the scenario that I don't particularly want is that Britain gets pulled off to the American centre of gravity and then Europe is left to be picked apart by the various Chinese and Russian interests. Now, I don't think that the economic factor of no-deal Brexit is going to be that terrifying. I could be wrong, but I don't think it is. But I think the diplomatic questions are important because you can bet this is what they want. They know that Britain doesn't have any friends right now.
So should we be leaping into an American trade deal or should we be a bit more wary of them?
Oh, no, we should be taking whatever free trade we can get from America, as much free trade as they can handle. We should be more wary of signing up any kind of diplomatic fealty to the US. Now, I'm an Atlanticist and I think that America is generally a force for good in the world. But I also don't think we should become the 51st state. And I think there'll be a line to be drawn between those two positions.
And Katie, the other big story causing argument today is the Telegraph poll with ComRes, which shows that 54% of the public agree with proroguing Parliament to deliver Brexit. Are you surprised?
But it has a number of findings which have set the news agenda today, and along with the proroguing stat, there was 88% of those surveyed believe that MPs are out of touch with the people they serve. Now, to be honest, I think the general view of politicians and Parliament mean that I would be surprised to find a point when you could get people off, you know, just random people off the street to say that they believe Parliament is 88% in tune with them. But quite quickly, and the way this is splashed in the Telegraph, is the idea really that Parliament is out of touch with the people and Boris Johnson is in touch with the people on Brexit. Now, that has stoked some controversy because lots of pollsters have been quick to point out that they're not completely comfortable with the tactics behind this poll. For example, the don't knows were taken out, and also there's a suggestion there were leading questions. Now, I personally think that any poll these days people take with a pinch of salt. If you look what we've had the past couple of years in UK politics, it's not really as though, I mean, polls that said Ed Miliband was definitely going to be Prime Minister, that Remain was definitely going to win the referendum. I think people have got quite used to looking at these things and with a degree of scepticism anyway. And there is also this pattern just generally in polls that if the poll says what you like or what fits with your worldview, you're more likely to tweet it, or Labour politicians say, look, Labour is ahead, when and vice versa. And when it's the other parties ahead, say, well, it's just a poll, we don't believe in polls. So I think you can have a row about any poll. What I think is interesting about this, though, is it does pitch in with the argument that the government is trying to make. This is a campaign government. They're not really too fussed about trying to get MPs on side. Their audience is the public. And what they're trying to make the case of is if, when Boris Johnson returns to Parliament at the beginning of September, Parliament succeeds, a majority of MPs succeed in stopping him from allowing the UK to leave at the end of October, and he finds himself in a general election, they will want their big campaign message should be the people versus Parliament.
It also depends how you ask the question. I mean, the question in the Telegraph poll today was, Boris needs to deliver Brexit by any means, including suspending Parliament if necessary, in order to prevent MPs from stopping it. Do you agree? Now, that is, you know, 44% agreed, 37% disagreed, and 19% say they didn't know. So does that mean they back him? Well, it does by that poll. But a couple of months ago, YouGov asked the question in a very different way. It was some Conservative leadership candidates who support Britain leaving the EU without a deal have suggested that if they became Prime Minister, they would prorogue Parliament. Suspicious word, prorogue. Do you think this is a good idea or not? And then you had 47% opposing it and 24% supporting it. So again, this is the basic art of opinion polls, how you ask the question. Language is not neutral. Language always tends to lead somebody in a certain direction. That's why there's quite rightly so much fuss made about the language used in referendums. And that's what we've just seen a reminder of today. I don't think there's ever been a time where people said they had confidence in Parliament. In democracies, people tend not to trust, really, their political masters. It's always been the way. And even the word Parliament and the word MPs, MP sounds worse than Parliament, for example. Do you trust the MPs on X? Usually people will say no, no matter what X is. Do you think Parliament should have a say? That sounds a lot more agreeable. So we've seen in this row the classic use of semantics and language in opinion polls. But the more important thing is that Boris thinks the public are behind him on law and order, we saw yesterday, and on delivering Brexit by any means necessary, which is his new language. Given that we know that the public is split on Brexit itself, it is a little bit hard to believe that the majority would back him on proroguing Parliament for a no-deal Brexit. But I think he's got the momentum, and sometimes, since the YouGov poll was taken, Boris Johnson has become Prime Minister, and he has displayed a grip on government. Not a lot of people thought he would do, but he's got grip, he's got momentum, he's got direction. And when you've got these three things going, people can start to agree because I think the government's got it together. Now, a lot of people might hate Boris Johnson and be horrified at the way his direction, the government's going and the speed that it's making. But Boris is gambling that momentum will create its own sort of approval. If Theresa May is floundering all over the place, people aren't going to say they agree with her. But if Boris looks like he's got a plan, if any prime minister thinks he's got a plan, even if Jeremy Corbyn says he's got a plan, people are more likely to say they support something as long as it looks coherent. And what Boris is trying his best to do right now is make out that his Brexit plan is coherent.
Fraser and Katie, thanks very much. And you can subscribe to this podcast through all the usual routes and do leave us a review. And do stay with us over the next few months as we see if Boris Johnson's momentum takes him slamming straight into a hard EU wall. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow.